You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
You are listening to Rural Roots Rising by the Rural Organizing Project, a monthly podcast created by and for rural Oregonians who are creatively and courageously building stronger and more vibrant communities for a just democracy. Today we are going to talk about rural community building. We will hear from Martha Verduzco from Hood River County and Katie Cook from Gillam County about how their community's needs drive their work.
Latinos are people of color. Felt that there was nothing there where people could feel comfortable calling and saying, hey, where do I go talk to an immigration attorney? My husband is beating me and I don't know what to do, you know, other than call the police. Or I have a letter that's in English, I don't know what it says, and I need somebody that I can trust.
My friend and I and the county judge got together in a room, and the judge wanted a committee to work on getting public child care in the town because it was becoming kind of an issue between the haves and the have-nots, and the people that were the favored families in town could find child care, and the people that weren't known or were more on the margins did not have child care.
My name is Jess Campbell, and I'm the director and an organizer with the Rural Organizing Project. During every episode of Rural Roots Rising, you'll be meeting inspiring community organizers from across Oregon that we get to work with, like Martha and Katie, who see a need in their communities and get to work organizing their neighbors and community to meet that need. At ROP, we often hold living room conversations, which bring people together from across a community to discuss the difficult issues impacting them the most. Together, we make a plan about what we can do to address it. This podcast is an evolution of that sharing and learning. Together, we can build up communities that are truly safe and welcoming for all. This is an act of practicing democracy. You just heard Martha Verduzco talking about why the Hood River Latino Network came together, and Katie Cook sharing why leaders in Gillam County built access to child care for all. In Oregon, we believe in showing up for our neighbors. What we see is that the most powerful organizing is led by people taking on the issues that most impact them and their communities. Part of rural life is having a deep connection to the land. Let's hear a bit more about Martha and Katie's homes and what moved them to take action in their rural communities.
I live in Hood River County, Mount Hood Parkdale. It's about 13 miles south of Hood River, the Columbia Gorge. I live on 6 acres on a little farm, husband, 3 kids, my dad. We have a horse named Aztec. We have like 6 goats, like 4 big goats and then like 3 little ones, 2 calves. And my neighbor, who's like my family, she's got 3 horses, a little foal, a pig, like 60 chickens. So I feel like they're mine too. When it gets colder, then you can definitely smell the chimney, you know, the firewood from the chimneys from the like 3 houses around. I've lived in Parkdale 6 years, but I was born and raised in Hood River County. So I've been there 40 years. The Hood River County, Wasco, that gorge area, there's a lot of Latinos, you know, it's orchards and packing houses, and my whole family's there. I I mean, both my grandparents, my mom, my cousins, my sisters, my brothers. It's an amazing place to be. I used to travel out of town a lot, and I was always happy to be back. That's where I belong. Yeah, when I was in high school, I was a junior, and the leadership teacher came up to me and asked if I wanted to run for ASB president. That was what got me started, because I would have never imagined to run for student body president, because I never looked at myself as a popular student, because that's what I thought. To be ASB or student body representative, you'd have to be popular. My little campaign that I did, you know, it was unity, and then I did a little Mexican dance before my speech. Well, back then they called it the Hick Hall and the Latino Hall, you know, and then there was that. And I just said, I want us to all be united, you know, we should all be together. That was my motto. So I did win. The first Latino and woman to be student body president in my school.
Yeah, it takes a lot of strength to live out there. I grew up in the city, and so when you live that far from a hospital or from a grocery store or from people, I don't think people should underestimate what that experience is like. And it has given me a huge amount of strength, and I love it, but there's also been some pain with the isolation. And I often wonder about what it was like for women in the early 1900s when they couldn't access vehicles very easily. And I know that a little bit of history is that some women just walked off and said they couldn't do it, and they just left. It's a beautiful place to live. It feels like there's like a mini Grand Canyon on one side with a river and mountain sheep and bass fishing in the water. And on the other side, there's open wheat fields that go on for miles and miles. The closest town is Condon, which is about 650 people, and that takes us about a half an hour to drive from the ranch. Our driveway is about 5 miles long, and it's all gravel. When you drive down the driveway about 2.5 miles in, you'll see an old schoolhouse where probably about 30 kids at one time went to school in the 1900s. And views from the ranch, you can see Mount Adams and Mount Hood and Mount Rainier, and the sunsets are absolutely stunning, and the stars, you feel like you can go out and touch them, and the wildlife is interesting. And I almost ran into a badger the other day, which surprised me. Sometimes I get close to stepping on a rattlesnake, so I have to be careful about where I'm walking. When I first came, I met my husband through the United Church of Christ. My brother is a UCC minister. But when he was learning how to be a minister, he was in Berkeley, and they had a program where he went to Condon and the other little town I own as an internship, and he met my husband. I was still in the Bay Area at that time. I was working for doctors and Planned Parenthood and different health organizations and working on my master's in public administration. And when my brother got ordained to be a minister, he took his wife out to Condon. And they went out to my husband's, what is now our ranch, and my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, said, "So Tom, how's your love life?" And he said, "Well, it's not that great." She said, "Well, you're tall." She said, "I know somebody tall. Don't bring anybody to the ordination service. There's somebody I want you to meet." So I was grumbling about going to the ordination service because I had to leave all my responsibilities in Oakland and go up to Oregon to
do this thing for my brother. And then I walked in the door and there was my future husband. And I knew the minute I walked in that we would be married. And I didn't know anything about it. I thought he had an awfully funny suit on though. And I was from the Bay Area in San Francisco, you know, and in my, you know, late 20s. And, you know, we thought a little bit more about fashion. And so I thought that was awfully funny, you know, like, what are you wearing? We need to do something about that. When I first came to Conan, the United Church of Christ was the big community church. And lots of people went to church and we had a minister and it did lots of active things in the little community, you know, worked on food banks or helped people who needed money for power. And if you know about the United Church of Christ, it works a lot on social justice issues and is pretty progressive in their theology. They ordain gays and lesbians and women. And so they were really a voice in the community. Everybody said, we really need a youth group. We need something for our youth. They have sports. They have 4-H. But they need a place where they can talk about, you know, their spirituality and their community. And so I said, okay, well, we'll give it a try. And we made it. You know, one thing about organizing is if you can really think about your time frames and what time would work best to attract the most amount of people and not, you know, when you're trying to get people to do something, don't ask for huge time commitments. And I think that was one of the real successes.
Living in the country and working with the land often conjure images of pastoral landscapes and serene silence. While those images are often accurate, living in the country can also be mighty isolating, particularly for rural Oregonians who find themselves on the margins. Breaking isolation by building connections, relationships, and community through organizing is a skill that many of us learn through necessity. Not only is it a part of rural culture to show up for barn raisings, but to stay for the long haul, we need to work with our neighbors to keep each other safe during the storm, flood, or fire, and to show up for each other when tragedies strike. The Rural Organizing Project was formed in 1992 by and for rural Oregonians for the purpose of connecting, resourcing, and supporting each other, to break isolation together, and to build communities that are safe and welcoming for all. Today, we work with over 65 autonomous groups across rural Oregon, and we continue to serve as an interconnected web. It was true in 1992, and it is still true today, that most of the rural leaders and organizers that we meet are doing so in order to meet an immediate community need, but ultimately their goal is to break isolation.
It was really difficult at times, but I was also knew that I was doing the right thing. The isolation was extremely challenging, and I was living next to my in-laws, who were wonderful people, but also struggled with some of the isolation issues, particularly my mother-in-law. She didn't know quite how to handle it, and depression was really a big issue for her. One of the things that was pretty challenging is sometimes we'd have like a winter where it'd be like -5 degrees and power would go out for like 5 days, and he had to be out checking all the calves and just trying to keep the water troughs going. And I was alone in this little double wide with a baby with no power for, you know, -5 degree weather and not good insulation. And I just remember going out and trying to chop the wood and put the baby right by the sliding door so I could see him. And then I'd chop the wood, and then I'd gather some snow and I'd put that in a big pot, and then I'd start the fire and I'd put the snow water on the wood stove so I could give the baby a bath. And I thought at that moment, I don't think I can do this. But I did, and we had two more children, a son 2 years later, and then a daughter 4 years later. And we eventually built a home that has beautiful views of the mountains, and it's very comfortable. And we made a life for ourselves there.
Yeah, I think that one thing that's really, really cool about a super small community is anybody can take leadership and anybody can organize and get something together. And, you know, the next thing I did when I had a baby, I started to realize that there's no childcare in town except through a private provider. And that's not really public childcare. And so then I was like, okay, so my friend and I have been friends for a long, long time. She's really good at budgets and she's now the city administrator. And we just thought, okay, we'll get on a committee. We'll work with the county judge. But they're not somebody with a legal background. And so it's very confusing when you say county judge, but they're like the main administrator for the county. Becoming kind of an issue between the haves and the have-nots, and the people that were the favored families in town could find childcare, and the people that weren't known or were more on the margin did not have childcare. So we just started with that little group, and it grew, and got a few more people on our board, and then we put together something and a loose structure, and got the Baptist Church to rent us a little space, and it went from there. Now it's morphed into a really steady program with $1 million building, and the person that we had hired many, many years ago to be the director is still there, and she put the building together and everything and got the grant, and it's a beautiful program.
February or March of 2016, my friend Jose Bibian made a phone call to me and said, are you willing to help me organize a march for the immigrants? It was a day without immigrants. And apparently he had had a number of phone calls. So I always like to help. I consider myself a humanitarian. So I mean, that's one of the reasons that I didn't hesitate to say, you know, yes, I'll help you. People need to be heard, and if they were calling us for help, that meant something. We made a Facebook event 2 days prior to the day, and we had a turnaround of about 200 people walk from the heights of Hood River to downtown waterfall, the Memorial Overlook, which is about 2 miles. So that was my, in the rain. There's a couple faces that, you know, that I mean, I remember that they were right behind me, and I never knew them on a personal level, but we're all community members. I mean, people that I've grown up, you know, that I don't know on a personal level, but when I would go to the grocery store, I would see them, you know, like, or when I was at, go to church, you know, there's a lot of people there and you always see them, but you never know who they are. But the people that do work out in the farms, you know, they don't like to be in the public eye, but they're always willing to say, you know, what, could we take waters? You know, they're willing to participate in their own way. And I think that I appreciate that, because that's their voice. That's how they're voicing that they appreciate and supporting the causes that we're working for or with. So after the march, a group of us, about five of us that are, we could kind of like public people in the Latino community, thought we should create some type of a group where people were Latinos or people of color felt that there was nothing there where people could feel comfortable calling and saying, hey, where do I go talk to an immigration attorney? My husband is beating me and I don't know what to do, you know, other than call the police, like what resources, those type of things. Or I have a letter that's in English, I don't know what it says, and I need somebody that I could trust to tell me exactly what it is. So we met a couple times and ended up creating this Hood River Latino Network. It's an advocacy group that we have in Hood River, and made a Facebook page and just told people that we were there to advocate for them, to empower them, to to create opportunities and a place of resource. You know, if you have a question of where something is, you know, send us a message, call us, text us. And if we don't know, we'll find out and, you know, guide you to the right place. That was like March. April, I got a phone call from a friend who has worked with a community for a long time and said there was a group of people coming in from out of town to talk about the immigration situation that's going on at the jail. We have a mini detention center in our backyard in Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, and Gilliam counties. Our county jail is a regional jail, and it has a contract with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So, and we don't want it there because it gives a sense of fear to our community. And that's when I met the Rural Organizing Project, Kara and Jessica and Hannah. And then things just started happening, and I began to look into things a little more. You know, I'm loud and obnoxious, but now I'm loud and obnoxious with a purpose, I feel. So that's what's continues to change, I think, all the time. The affirmation that we are doing something right. And that we could change things a little bit at a time. So we've created a coalition, Gorge ICE Resistance. There's been counties that have canceled their contract with ICE, and that's a big success there in itself. So we're just continuing to work to get ICE out of NorCorps.
Listening to these two interviews side by side, I was struck by how different their stories are. Katie began building community out of the need to break her own isolation, while Martha's community is who called her into doing the work she does today with the Hood River Latino Network and Gorge ICE Resistance. Both Katie and Martha's stories illustrate how sometimes it just takes sharing an idea to find people to work together with, and how those people together can build enough momentum to take that initial idea to heights that they couldn't have originally dreamt of.
I mean, it came out of a personal interest again because of my extreme isolation. I said, I have to go to town, and I just worked at the local clinic when my kids were little, just a little bit, just so I could have some interaction with people. But I was like, well, where do I take my child? There's something that's really important to you that you need in your life, whether it's childcare or healthcare or, you know, concern about immigrant issues or climate issues or whatever that need is. That's the flame that will get you going, and then you start talking to a few other people that those same issues are important to, you know. And then from there, it just depends kind of where you think the need is next. I mean, do you need a center, or do you just need a group, or what? And you just really just start circling and having a lot of conversations with people. And then if it seems like you need to reach bigger goals, whether it's a child care center or something else, then go for it, because if you get enough people behind you, anything can happen.
You know, we've been working on Know Your Rights trainings throughout the last couple of years. When we were doing them, there was raids. Well, we never had a big raid at Hood River, but people are still fearful. Like, well, what if we go to these Know Your Rights training and then they show up there? And not everybody has access, even though Facebook is the internet is a popular place for people to find information. So people don't know how to navigate it. I hope that I make people feel that our group makes people feel like there's a little bit of hope, that they're not helpless or hopeless. So we do a Latino festival. I guess we could begin eventually change and say multicultural festival. You know, it's basically like a resource fair. And because I am Mexican, I mean, that's what I know in terms of Mexican music, and the majority of Latinos are Mexicans in Hood River County. So we bring entertainment. So I know that in my culture, the way to get people to come and find out about resources and information is with it food and entertainment. So, you know, at this Latino festival, we have like a headliner band and local food booths that come and sell. So they make, you know, to promote their business as well. But we have a lot of community agencies join us. We talk about the issues, you know, and we feel your frustration, and we're working as hard as we can to make it better. So I figured that looking at what a actual judicial warrant signed by a judge is versus the detainer form. So what I went ahead is I printed two of each and then just passed them out in the audience so that they could have. And I had we had one of the local immigration attorneys go up and talk about it and give examples. And, you know, if they knock on your door, you have the right to ask, you know, let me see your warrant, and then explained the difference between both of them. So we asked the audience, you know, was this helpful? Yay, yes. So people were happy. So it was good. I wish there's a place where my mom could have gone when she felt that, you know, they weren't treating them well at the packing house, or, you know, that my dad was being yelled at by his foreman. You know, I wish there was a place that they, a person who they knew they could go and trust and at least hear them out. Maybe not be able to do anything for them, but at least hear them out. And because sometimes that in itself, just being able to talk about what's going on, gives you that relief. I want us to build a community resource center where people can come in and just chill or just ask for information. We need that, you know, a place that's zen, you know, and it doesn't matter if you're homeless. I mean, people who have a lot of money sometimes feel are the people who are the most lost, you know, because we're not understood. Sometimes it's just about not being understood. And it's not just about Latinos, you know, there's so many other issues that we're battling within our communities, you know, mental health, drug addiction, you know, acceptance of who we are. Our mission is that everybody is safe, that we have a beautiful environment, you know, that there's a place for our kids to go to be safe, you know, just that we want to be part of the community as one.
You have been listening to Rural Roots Rising by the Rural Organizing Project, a monthly podcast created by and for rural Oregonians who are creatively and courageously building stronger and more vibrant communities for a just democracy. If you are inspired to organize with your neighbors, go to ruralrootsrising.org. Our website has more information and resources about the child care cooperative Katie helped start, the Hood River Latino Network and Latino Festival, as well as more information about NORCOR and ICE contracts in Oregon. We featured music from the Rhodes Sodas, the Low Tide Drifters, and Diana Wild in this episode. Do you want to help us share powerful rural organizing from across Oregon? Send us your organizing stories, ask your local radio station to play this podcast, and donate to sustain this project at ruralrootsrising.org. Rural Roots Rising is created by the Rural Organizing Project, a network of over 65 autonomous member groups committed to advancing human dignity and democracy across rural Oregon. To learn more about the Rural Organizing Project, go to ROP.org. If you liked what you heard today, you can find more episodes at ruralrootsrising.org. Please follow Rural Roots Rising on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Are you a musician? If you would like for us to feature your music in a future episode, please reach out to us.
This is your lucky day. You have the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to pay amazingly high prices for some incredibly worthless stuff. Just keep listening, and we'll tell you over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Aren't you glad this is KBOO? KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Non-commercial.
Over and over and over and over and over.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. In 2011, in the journal Critical Public Health, Dr. Catherine McLean wrote, quote, "By the end of 1991, needle exchange was offered in a small handful of cities across the U.S., in Portland, Tacoma, San Francisco, and occasionally New York, New Haven, Philadelphia, and Boston. Only Portland's privately financed exchange had achieved clear, albeit limited, legality," end quote. That's history, because nowadays, of course, there are syringe service programs in operation all over the U.S. Many operate with the full legal backing of their state and local governments. Some don't. At the federal level, it's murky at best. Our federal public health authorities all endorse syringe exchange, yet syringe service programs are prohibited from using federal funds to buy syringes because of Congress. We have made a lot of progress over the years. We still have a long way to go, but we have made